Oh, Mr. Kaufman, it's very nice to speak with you. My name is Sterling, and I've been spending the morning listening to you and watching you on YouTube. It's the marvel of the internet, you know.
Oh, true, true, exactly.
We're looking forward to you being here a week from Sunday, playing with in Phoenix, and then we'll have you the next week on our station on the title role in Parsifal from the Met.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
That's pretty exciting. You know, when I think of you, as I listened to you today, and I was thinking about the chance to speak with you, and I don't want to keep you really long because I'm told you're pretty busy, and I can well imagine. I have to say, and I'm sure you're fond over all the time, people kind of lay down in front of you and worship you, but I don't know that I've ever heard a voice that seems like it's at home doing everything. You just seem that, and I want to start with this. When did you in your life realize you had this voice?
It was kind of late, I have to say, because I started my singing career in the music conservatory as a very lightweight, typical German tenor, and well, that's what I thought my voice would sound like, because that's other than with another instrument that you buy a new one and you know and expect how it probably sounds like, and then your teacher tries it out and then he shows you how it's supposed to sound, and then you just imitate it and find your own style. With a voice, the problem is no one other can try it out. No one other can tell you how this instrument might sound like, which is obviously a very good thing, because this means that there's no instrument in the world as individual and as versatile as the human voice. But it makes it also very hard to guess what your specific instrument would ideally sound like. So you end up imitating other people, and you get stuck with something that you believe is the right sound. And in my case, I was wrong, because I realized once I started the real career and had my first contracts and I sang every day, I realized I had an instrument that wasn't reliable at all, and it would just break every now and then, and I had one cold after the other, and it was a really tough time. And I was very close in quitting that completely and doing something else, because it stressed me too much to go on stage and not knowing whether your instrument would be reliable enough to sustain the evening or not. And then I thankfully found another teacher, an American baritone called Michael Rhodes, and he showed me a completely different way of using my instrument, and he revealed something that I would have never expected before. And then the first time I realized that I might have the chance to sing actually the repertory that I was always dreaming of, meaning all the Verdi, the Puccini, and the Wagner stuff, which was miles away before. But so it was not clear from the very beginning.
Yeah, you answered several questions there. The way you've had to approach your voice gives you an intimacy with it that not a lot of singers have. Some singers, you travel with your voice all the time. It's not like you're carrying a violin on the plane. It's with you. It's part of your life. But for you, it's been a fragile thing and kind of a surprise. And the way you approach the voice, I wondered if you'd ever studied with a baritone, because you have that rich bottom, but you have that lyric high quality. It's just a remarkable sound.
Yes, in fact, Michael Rhodes was a baritone, but I think it was my instrument that we discovered together. And it was not that I tried to imitate him. On contrary, it was actually he had a very flexible voice, and he was sitting there at the piano with 70-something years old, and he would sing the most spectacular high notes, but very relaxed. Singing a B flat and even a B for a baritone is really, really high. And he sat there and he just sang it, and there was no effort, no visible effort at all. So that struck me so much that I said, "Oh, damn, if he can do it with that age, and I'm 20-something and I can't, and I'm supposed to be the tenor, not him, there must be a trick that he needs to teach me." And the darkness of the voice actually came later. It was when finally my instrument was left in peace, let's say. I wasn't torturing it all the time, and it just could relax, and it could grow, and it could mature. And part of this maturation was actually this darkening of the sound, when the finally the whole body, the whole rib cage, everything could amplify the sound, because I wasn't panicking before each high note. I wasn't having doubts or anything. I was very certain with my instrument, and that's how this whole thing then came together.
We won't be hearing you do any Wagner, but your latest release that's coming out, I just saw the press release this morning, is Wagner. And it was a wonderful story on a video that I saw about, it was actually your grandfather, is that right, that kind of introduced you to Wagner?
Absolutely. My grandfather, also my father and his son, they were both great Wagnerians, and they loved this kind of music. And so they were playing it on LPs, on tapes all the time. And they were visiting concerts and performances. But my grandfather also, they all played the piano, so I had to learn it as well. But my grandfather loved to play the vocal scores himself, sitting there at the piano Sunday afternoon and just mime through all the characters. So he was singing the Brunhilde and the Isolde and as well as the Wotan, the deepest bass, all the characters, all the singers in it. And this was kind of our entertainment program for us children. We were sitting there on the floor around the piano or under the piano, and we just had enjoyed it very much. And for me, it was very natural and very normal to grow up with that kind of music. And I just found out much later that this is actually a privilege when you want to have a profession like I'm having now. So this is true. And I still have all his vocal scores. So I still have these beautiful books there, actually, because they're hardcover. With decorations, with the gold and with pictures of the first worldwide world premiere of these pieces, and how the set has looked like and everything. It's fantastic.
That's a magical story. It must be marvelous for the family that you're now singing Wagner and not just playing it at the piano.
Exactly. Yeah, they enjoyed it still. Well, I mean, my father and my grandfather are still around, not around anymore. But I'm sure if you believe in that, they watch from above and they are having fun now.
I'm not sure how familiar you are with the program. I'm sure you've got a lot of programs you're doing this year, but you'll be opening here with some Puccini, the Hidden Harmony, Ricordita Armonia, from Tosca.
Yes.
Tell me about this piece. How this.
Well, Tosca, I have to say, I mean, Puccini is a beautiful composer also, and it was like almost like a painter who was painting with much more colors than all the other composers before had done. And it's actually a very realistic painting that he draws there, because it's just you can almost grab and see the action and the movements that he tried to bring to life in the music. Some people call it it's like the first film music maker, because it feels like it's the perfect match. And sometimes in second act of Tosca, for instance, there comes this melody, bum 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 bum, and it sounds like a tune from, I don't know, James Bond or something. It's really fantastic how great he was in describing the situation. And Tosca, I have to say, is not only mine, but probably for most audience of opera lovers, one of the all-time favorite operas. It's just so beautiful. And there are two beautiful arias, and one of them is the Recondita Armonia, which almost opens the first act. And it's a beautiful tune, and of the guy who is in love with that, so much in love with that woman, and he tries to apologize, actually, that he draws a painting of the Virgin Mary and the Maria Magdalena, and actually not painting his girlfriend, but painting another girl that he saw. So he's comparing those two girls. A very lovely song.
It looks as though the program is set up so that you'll open the concert, and then the orchestra will sort of set up the evening when you move to Ponchielli. We'll hear the orchestra play the Dance of the Hours, and then you come in with an aria from La Gioconda. Is it Cielo e Mar? Which I'm not. Is that sky and sea? I'm not even sure what that is.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It's called Cielo e Mar, so sky and sea. He's waiting for for the woman he loves, for his angel, and he says, "L'angelo mio verrà dal cielo, or l'angelo mio verrà dal mare." So my angel, will it come from heaven? Will my angel come from the sea? And so he's also very colorful, describing his longing for this the girl. Well, it's always with love. I mean, this is what our life actually is all about, I believe. And if it all comes down to when you cut out all the business meetings and the financial things, and you just what lasts is love, the love to your mother, the love to your children, the love to your boy, girlfriend, whatever, your wife, your husband, and this is what keeps us going. And therefore, most of the operas are having this as one of the main themes: love and tragedy and jealousy and murderer. These are the big sellers now in cinema and always in opera been the case.
It looks as though when I look at a program like this for a singer like you, when you do an opera, you have an evening to maintain character. You're not only singing, but you're portraying a story as an actor. And here you're jumping from Puccini to Ponchielli, Bizet is next from Carmen, and then you go to Mascagni. And the orchestra's playing in between, but does that allow you enough time to get into character? Or is this an opportunity to say, you know what, I'm not in character. I'm going to sing this the way I've always wanted to sing this.
No, I don't think so, because what really counts is not me. What really counts is the intention of the composer, because he has written all these operas with a certain idea and in the right circumstances, with the right background, with the right support of emotions, and this is what you're looking for. And I think it would be wrong to just take an opera aria and say, well, since this is a concert, I will do it differently now, because I've always sung it in opera, and in the circumstances I have to stick to the plan of the composer, but now I can do it my way. This would be wrong. I'm absolutely certain that as much as we have as an interpreter have influence in the character that we are describing and modeling, we also have, I think, the duty to support the power and the magic of the composition, and by going too far away from what the original intention was, I think you're actually diminishing the work and not helping it to do its trick.
So you hear the intermezzo from Cavalleria Rusticana, and then you're doing the Mamma, che vino generosa, right?
Exactly. This is a beautiful moment when he just he wants to say goodbye to his mother, because he knows that he's not going to come back, but he just can't tell her right away, and so it's a sad moment, and he's drunk also only because he's drunk he actually has the courage to talk to her about that, and a beautiful aria. Yeah, but you're absolutely right. It is not easy. It is kind of a challenge to jump from one character to another. The more experience you have on an opera stage, the easier it becomes to just slip into a character as if a glove that you're wearing every day and it just fits perfectly. At the beginning of my career, I had really problems in I would say maybe my first two opera productions, mid second act, I was in character. Up to that point, I was busy with other things and getting rid of my nervousness or sorting out my vocal problems or something like that. But once you've reached a certain amount of experience and you're matured and also the vocal technique has been defined, I think it's you come to a very natural approach to singing in general, not only singing an opera, also singing a concert, also singing a lead recital, for instance, which I also do very often. So that technique and all the circumstances are not in the way anymore. You just don't think at all of how you're going to place the next note and where you're going to take the breath and what it just comes natural, and it should be. It's just like talking. You see, when you're an actor, you don't take a breath and think, oh no, I'm going to darken my voice, and for the next phrase I'm going to lighten it up, and then I whisper, and then, no, you don't do that. You just follow your instincts because you are in character. You feel the emotions that this person should feel at that moment, and because you do, it just comes naturally, because that's what our instinct tells us. And this instinct is something that you have to gain back once you've learned all the technique, and you have to treat the singing just as one of the most natural things of communication. And if that works, once you've achieved that, you just can do, as you mentioned at the beginning of this interview, almost everything. It's you have really carte blanche. You can choose whatever you want, because as long as you stick to that thing, that you don't overdo, that you don't squeeze your voice or force it to do something, but follow the instincts that your feelings will provide you once you are slipping into this situation and fully understand what's going on. It will be automatically truthful and interesting, and it tells a story. And that's what we're trying to do. And that's, once you've had that, then, now I'm coming back to the beginning of your question, then it's easy also to just turn it on and off, because you just know where the button is and how to push it. And then this comes, and then the next piece and the next piece, and you just slip it from one glove to another, and it works.
That's remarkable. We all have favorite composers, and there are those people that, if you walk up to someone on the street, they probably know Verdi, they know Puccini, but then there are those composers, yeah, I remember that tune, but I'm not sure who composed it. There are those people who write melodies that I've always wanted to be able to wrap my voice around, and I'm thinking of Massenet and Leoncavallo. You're doing Why Awaken Me. They'd be doing the meditation from Thais, and you go right into something from Werther here. Am I right? Are these melodies that are just liquid in your mouth?
Oh, they're fantastic, I have to say. And especially Werther is one of the pieces I love very much, because it's this ideal, to my, at least in my experience, ideal combination of this German, dark and thoughtful, self-reflecting, crazy character, combined with this beautiful French music. I always say if Werther would have been composed by German, it would have been a failure. But this combination is so gorgeous, and this music is divine, how it describes the nature and everything. Also the storm and the tempest at the end of Act 3 to Act 4. This music is gorgeous, absolutely. So this is also one of my favorite parts because of the character, but also one of my favorite operas because of the composition.
You end with the one that everybody will be crying by the time you get done, from Paiacci, put on the costume. This is one of those signature pieces for a tenor. How do you? It's hard for you. You'll hear the intermezzo from Paiacci, and then you sing. But again, there's that switch. You've got to turn it on, and you're going deep inside a character, just out of the chute.
Exactly. This is one of the things where it really starts right away. You don't have much time to just for that journey. It you just have to be there from the very first note. But this is the thing with the Italian verismo in general. I think there is no other movement in music history where composers were trying so hard to just express the real feelings. I mean, real up to the point where it gets an exhibitionistic tendency, that they just, I mean, every layer is put down, and you just see the pure soul and the pure misery and the pure suffering. So therefore, it's very important that you just are right there from the very beginning, because otherwise you won't make it in those 5-6 minutes of music. So to have this impact that you need to achieve for such a beautiful masterpiece.
Knowing that your father and your family were fans of music, I'm just wondering, who did you grow up hearing sing this from Paiacci? What's the tenor you remember?
Well, Paiacci. Well, I mean, there are many. There was Del Monaco, there was Corelli singing that. And I remember, of course, when I was young, there was a new CD of Verismo arias coming out from Luciano Pavarotti, and he did the same like Caruso did, the famous picture of the Pagliacci with the drums in his hand and the white makeup and everything. And so he probably had a reference to Caruso, and Caruso was the Pagliacci of all times probably, and so there are many to mention. And I have to say, this was I recorded this I would say 2 years ago on an album called Verismo, and this was the key piece for me because I had so much respect for that, and I always refused to sing it when I was young because I thought it's too precious to just sing it like all the others. I have to wait for it until I'm really ripe, until I can really handle it. And there are only a few pieces where I had so much respect on not touching it too early, and at least in the room. You see, I'm not talking about making this this performance on stage, but only when you are with your teacher or with your coach or something, and you try out new things, and or for fun, let's do that. And I had a teacher, a coach in music school. She would always allow me on Christmas. She would allow me to choose for once the things that I always wanted to sing, but she would think they're totally not for me. So I sang Aida and things like that, but I always said no, Pagliacci, no, I'm not going to do that because I don't want to spoil this piece with my unfinished technique.
I have such respect for that because I can't imagine you spoiling anything. But it's fascinating when you ran down the list of the tenors that you can that this is one of their trademark pieces. And it always goes back to Caruso at a time when we started talking about YouTube and the fact that you're making CDs that have such clean presence and they sound so remarkable. But even through the scratches of the Caruso, there's so much there for all of us. And it just strikes me what a marvelous continuation it is that we go with your tenor voice now, which is a different kind of tenor voice and one that I have it's such a beautiful thing. And we look forward to welcoming you to the Valley.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. I can't wait. Thank you so much. Yeah, and also, I mean, I hope you're all going to hear the Parsifal. And I don't want to forget to mention that right after the concert I'm doing there, a couple of days later, we have the live transmission in the movie theaters from the Parsifal, which I think is an outstanding production. And the cast is divine. So we're very much looking forward to that also.
I hope one day to meet you because I would love to be able to just talk about these kinds of things for a great length of time. But Jonas Kaufmann, thank you so very much.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you.